drop into
Critical
Avenue.
Motherfucker.
Yo, 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 what it do, my critical crew? It's your boy Edwards, and I'm here with the main hitters, the usual suspects. We got my blood brother with me, Mandy, aka the Dominican Robert Downey, que lo que, DRD.
Yo, what up, everybody? It's your boy, the DRD. But it's not my show, though. And you can call me Louis Strauss.
We also got my blood, or actually not my blood brother, but my brother from another, Brian, aka Ken Dog. What's goody, my guy?
What's going on, yo? Ready to talk about the movie, have a little shorty, call her Schloppenheimer, you feel me? Give me that bomb dome.
Yikes.
So I'm ready to do a little compare and contrast.
She know what she wants.
You already know.
Damn.
Alright, so last but not least, we got my dog Isaac, aka Residente Boomer. What's poppin', my G?
Most really good, my guy. It's El Residente Boomerist Most Maximus. You smell me? Sick cinephile. The cinematic Mitch McConnell, because I be forgetting my lines, apparently. So, but I'm with it. I'm happy to be here with y'all. Talk about this lit ass movie. I think it's the best thing to bring us together. So let's get it.
Facts. And without further ado, together we are Critical Ave, always hitting you with that raw and real street critique, deep dives and hot takes for days. Oh, and by the way, we don't do this shit spoiler free, so if you're not with that, just come back later.
Word.
Otherwise, kick back and relax and get ready for the dopest episode ever. And that's because we are covering, drum roll please, Oppenheimer.
Oh, damn.
2023 by Christopher Nolan,
who is, I feel, a divisive figure amongst us.
He's
a divisive director. Am I saying that word right? Divisive?
I think it's divisive. I've heard divisive.
Is it divisive?
Divisive?
Y'all know what I'm trying to say.
We'll go with the flow.
But I feel like amongst us, because there's more than two of us amongst us.
I feel like it was amongst the general public too.
You think so?
Yeah, yo, I think.
I feel like the public rides Nolan's dick. Yikes.
Damn.
You don't feel that way?
Let's get into that, but first let me do a brief synopsis of this movie, quick. Now, I mean, let me just give you like a version, you know what I mean? So I'm gonna hit you with a quick one too, yo. First, Oppenheimer, yo. It's Christopher Nolan's latest flick. Came out this year, 2023. And it's based on the 2005 biography American Prometheus by Kai Bird and Martin J. Sherwin.
Let's get it.
You know what I'm saying? The film is about the life of J. Robert Oppenheimer. Make sure I say that right.
One more time.
Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
Yo, damn. Remember I used to butcher?
Everyone's
that
dead,
he's a butcher? Damn, yo.
There it is.
Yeah, man. Oppenheimer, he's an American theorist, physicist, who was a pivotal in the developing of the first nuclear weapon as part of the Manhattan Project.
It's a hard name.
And thereby ushering in the atomic age. It stars Cillian Murphy, not Cillian. Fuck out of here. You know what I'm saying? He's in Oppenheimer. He's going to win an award for best eye action. You know what I mean? You got Emily Blunt as his wife, Kitty. Putting in that work. You got Brian's boy, Matt Damon.
two people that I really identify with are in this movie. Well, not that I identify with Matt Damon, but he's just the object of my hate.
It's synonymous with you, though.
Yeah. So right.
Kem Dog and Matt Damon, they go together like white on rice. But that's your boy, Matt Damon. He did his thing. General Leslie Groves.
We'll get into it. We'll get into
it. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's the director of the project.
Sure.
Robert Downey Jr., aka the DRD right here himself.
Damn,
Mandy. Making a cameo for us. Thank you, for taking your time out of your busy schedule.
I was going to say that's my stepdad.
Yeah, oh, they aged Mandy a lot now.
Oh, yeah, what up?
Louis Strauss.
Yeah,
I don't know if you pronounce it the way he wants it to, but you know, whatever you feel, yo. And you know, he's a senior member of the United States Atomic Energy Commission. And then, you know, it's an ensemble cast, yo. Hella star studies, hella actors in here, yo. Florence Pugh, Josh Hartnett, Casey Affleck, Rami Malek, Kenneth Branagh.
It's Branagh.
And then many more, yo, because the list goes on forever, yo. Matter of fact, let's give them some shout-outs, man. Who y'all appreciate in this flick real quick, yo?
Casey Affleck out of nowhere, dog. He just appeared, just man random.
What about the illustrious Josh Peck, yo?
Yo, that's my guy, yo. Yo, when I saw him, I'm just like, yo, I know that's right, yo. Josh Peck. Josh, motherfucking
Peck. Dead ass, yo. Tell me in the movie theaters, you don't hear like a little rumble when people saw him.
Yeah. He got stained. He got stained. Somehow. Yo, he has our childhood, bro. Like, so
he does.
Just like,
and then his other shorty, Thrillby, what's her first name?
Olivia.
Olivia Thrillby. She starred with Josh Peck in another movie called The Whackness.
Yeah.
And I knew that she was familiar the moment I saw her. I was like, I know who you are, yo. I know who you are. Yeah. And that's her. So I'm a lesser known actress, but like interesting that Christopher Nolan.
Yo, my man. Yo, you have me in the film, Benny Safdie, though?
Yo.
Come on,
yo.
Yo, come on. Two of the stars of this movie are in the room right now. Yo,
where?
Yeah. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule.
Benny Safdie and Robert Downey Jr. here live and direct. Yo.
Do they have one of the Skarsgård brothers in here?
If they
did, I think he was Heisenberg.
He's Hans Beth.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I don't remember that guy.
Yeah. I don't know, but damn, dog. Star studded.
Oh, these fucking Rami Malek.
Yo, that's me too.
We missed it. Damn, that's you too. Yo, what the?
I kind of wanna just ask.
Don't
just real quick. Of the ensemble cast, right? Who really put in that work for you guys? Like, who stood out? I think something that should be said about this film is that the way that it was written, I feel like every character kind of had like their moment to shine. So when I'm asking you guys like who stood out, I just want to put out that disclaimer as well that like every actor and actress in this movie had their moment to shine. And I'm literally just asking what your preference was.
Before we answer that, since you're singing so high praises, why don't you go ahead and share what your light is for this flick.
All right.
And the precursor to the listeners out there, this is the light before the discussion that is subject to change at the end of the discussion, whether you could hold it or change your mind.
And we base this on the traffic light. Green meaning we love it. Yellow meaning we're on the fence about it. And red meaning like we won't mess with this movie.
Shit was ass.
OD. So Brian, from the traffic light, what you giving this?
Yo, I'm gonna give it a yellow.
Damn.
Yellow,
strong
man.
Yellow.
Strong yellow.
Strong yellow.
So you're running it.
Yeah.
So you're running past this yellow.
Yeah. But it's a yellow. It's a yellow. Okay. I think maybe after the strength of this conversation, maybe it might change to a green. But there's a very specific reason why I do have it at a yellow. And I'll bring it up during the podcast. And we'll see where it goes from. Mm.
Hey, yo. DRD. Well, your light is
green.
Green.
Damn, off green. The gate.
Just no hesi.
No hesitation.
You know what's funny? While I was watching the movie, because I was sat right next to Monty, actually. I was sat right next to the DRD. And I was just like, I was watching the movie, and I was just like, it's a good movie, but I'm just like, I don't know why I thought about the DRD specifically, but I was just like, I don't know if the DRD would fuck with this movie. I don't know if biopics are something that the DRD likes.
Monty loves biopics.
Does he? Do you?
To an extent.
We'll get into it.
That's interesting. We'll get back. So, Zach, how you feel about this song? What's your light?
Yeah, yo, I oscillate between a green and a tepid yellow. Mm. That's the range. That's where I'm at.
Damn.
I know. It's weird to me because, like, I think about Christopher Nolan and, like, my dislike for him as of late. This didn't do anything to make me feel like he's a GOAT. I'll say that. But removing the movie away from Christopher Nolan, it stands on its own legs. And in that regard, like it's a green. But in concert with the rest of his filmography, it's still a tepid yellow to me. So like I'm there. Am I cool to stay there? Am I cool to be like between a tepid? I have to be decisive.
Yeah,
I feel
like you're being a bitch. Yeah. Take your choice. Pick a color.
Yeah, choose a side.
Tepid yellow.
Tepid yellow.
Tepid yellow.
That's a yellow you'll stop at, right?
Oh, that's a yellow I'll respect like two lights down.
Damn, alright.
That's wild.
Oh shit, alright. And I'm gonna go with a green myself. Yo, I might kind of go with a hard green actually.
Really?
Yeah, a hard green on this one.
Oh, I gotta ask you a follow-up question after that then.
But I mean, you can. I was gonna go back to how you felt about who stood out performance. By all means, man.
Yo, honestly, I think for me, the standout performer.
You about to say it.
Who am I gonna say?
Matt Damon, dog.
No. Although I'm gonna keep it G. This is probably the first film that I've seen Matt Damon where I'm just like, oh, he's acting. Right.
Where he's not Matt Damon.
Yeah, I'm just like, all right. But when he first appeared on the screen, I'm just like, oh, it's Matt Damon. But then he lost himself in the role, and I felt that. I felt it. So props to Matt Damon, dog. Wow. There's hope for you still. Crazy coming from me, from a complete nobody. You already won.
It's on the record now.
Right. But no, he did his thing in Oppenheimer. But the person for me, at least, that really stood out, and obviously I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but I think, just to give it a little context, I think the reason why I feel this way is because I haven't really seen him tackle a role as serious as this in quite a while. So it's very refreshing to see him tackle a role like this, because I know he's capable of doing it, because we've seen him do these roles before, but then he got the super contract with, you know, another distributor, Marvel. But I think Robert Downey Jr. fucking did his thing in this movie.
I think he fucking
acted his ass off. I think he, whatever they did with, like, and props to, like, makeup too, because the way they made him look older than he was crazy. Like, I was just like, man, like, and then just everything about him, the way he did the role, even like the things that he would say, like, in press conferences, mm-hmm. like, to promote the movie, it's just been like, it's all been very class. So I think Robert Downey Jr., I think this might be too soon to say it, but I think he might have a really good shot at possibly being nominated for the Oscar and even possibly winning for this role. So,
I agree.
What about you guys?
I mean, for me, like, I don't know why it's such a small cameo, but like, and I don't remember his name, like his real name. I know the name that we call him, like, amongst ourselves.
Same for me.
Yeah. secondhand Leonardo DiCaprio, dog.
Oh, that guy.
Oh yeah. Right. Because
my boy from Breaking Bad.
He's not from Breaking Bad. He's from Chronicle. That's where I first was introduced to him.
Yeah, me too.
And then I think I saw him again in
You talk about Jesse Plemons.
I'm talking about him from Better Call Saul.
I haven't seen Better Call Saul.
Wait, what's it Breaking Bad?
If you're talking about Jesse,
that looks like Matt Damon?
Jesse Plemons, bro.
Plemons, yeah.
Yeah, that white body face.
Yeah.
The dude that was Green Goblin in The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, his name is Dane DeHaan.
Yo, you know what's crazy?
AKA fake Leonardo DiCaprio.
When I first saw him act in Chronicle,
yeah,
I was like, there's something here.
Right.
And then I don't know what happened.
Then he just disappeared.
Yeah.
Or we just haven't really been watching his movies like that. Like, I don't know. But no, like, I messed with this role because, like,
I don't know who you're talking about. I'm sorry.
Wow. Okay. I'll remind you right now.
Matt Damon's assistant.
Matt Damon's, like, I think he later became a colonel in the movie. So this was the man in between Strauss and my other boy, Dallas Machian.
Oh, yes.
Dallas Machian.
Cool. Borden.
Yeah, thank you. Borden's character.
Fucking
so
Borden.
He was the
Polka
guy.
Polka Dot Man?
Yeah, Polka Dot Man, right.
Yo, me and Marty were just laughing every time, like, different people were, like, coming on screen. We're just like, look at this fucking guy. Look at this guy doing a serious role.
I just mess with his character so much because, like, he is an embodiment of, like, the corporate businessman, even though he's in the military, right? Like, because Strauss can't get his own hands dirty. Right. So he needs to go through an intermediary. And it's just interesting to see how, like, this politician has so much power over the U.S. government. I'm sorry, over the U.S. military, that, like, he can involve someone else who himself already has some kind of prejudicial hatred, or at least a strong dislike of Oppenheimer, and, like, just jumped on it and is like, yeah, I'm a sycophant. I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to just go out of my way and, like, play, you know, this person who's going to potentially hurt this man, like, down the road.
Right.
And, you know, because I think it's important to remember that it's because of him and his dislike for Oppenheimer that it was so easy for him to volunteer Strauss's usage of him.
Right.
And I think that's an important role. It's the catalyst for what honestly was the breadth and the meat of the movie. Because, yeah, there was a bomb. But, like, the majority of the movie was this hearing, and this private hearing, and then this very public hearing.
The discrediting.
Right, exactly. So I mess with that. I fuck with that. Mm. That's how I feel about it.
Monty, the DRD?
Yeah, man.
And you can't, and you can't talk about yourself.
I don't want to be like that, you know what I'm saying? This is very unbiased of me. But, you know, I really did I was proud, man. I was very proud to see him do this role. I was like, it's been a long time. And I'm glad, like, that you ain't one of them actors that, you know, stay stuck on a role and they're like, oh, they just know you for this guy. Like, which a lot of them are very modest and say, you know, I enjoy the fact that they know me as Iron Man or whoever the fuck. But he basically said, I could do other things too.
Right.
And besides him, I think my man, Benny Safdie caught my attention too, you know.
And, Teller, right? What was his name, right?
Edward Teller. Yeah.
Teller, yeah.
And I don't know who else did it for me, but I think those two stand out the most for me because, for me, they made the movie interesting. Like, I it's hard. Like, it sucks because I know Killian is, like, the main character, but he wasn't doing it for me. Hot take. He gave me mad Messi vibes, yo.
Messi vibes? I don't think I understand.
Like, Lionel Messi vibes?
He was kind of mundane, bro.
Wow.
I mean, he's playing an astrophysicist. They don't necessarily.
I mean, I get it. I respect it. But, like, I'm happy for him in reality. Like, I am. Like, I was like, yo, that's what's up. You're the fucking leading man for once. And I'm like, but I don't know. He was too dull for me.
What did you want him to be like? This is like by order of the fucking Peaky Blinders. Like, what did you want him to be? Like, he's playing Oppenheimer.
Yeah,
dog.
Yeah. Like, I didn't expect him to be like his character in the Peaky Blinders. But again, like, Robert Downey stole the show for me.
I can't wait to revisit this episode after Cillian Murphy has like won the Oscar for leading role.
Oh,
like,
no, look, I'm for it. If he wins it, but I have a feeling.
Saying this shit right now.
Yeah. No. Look,
it sounds like what you're saying is you don't fuck with Oppenheimer, the man. That's what that sounds like to me.
No. Not like that either. Like, I'm all right with him being the leading man, but he didn't do it for me. It was Robert Downey. And if anything, that man might get an Oscar.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like they both in line to win. This feels like a shoe-in to get nominated.
Yeah, probably.
For both of them. And I feel they're in great contention to win. Like, obviously, this is a summer blockbuster, so the real Oscar season hasn't started yet. So we don't know who their competition is, but it feels like they're going to be the dudes that are going to be. Yo, for real, this kind of brings me to the person I'm going to select as my standout performance.
Ryan Gosling?
Not Ryan Gosling, but
Margot Robbie.
A woman, yo.
Olivia Thirlby.
Emily Blunt, dude. I feel like, yo, she didn't have that much screen time, but she did not play no fucking game.
Oh, where?
She was out here telling the truth when nobody wanted to hear it, yo. Real talk. I was like,
She went off. I think that's part of the criticism that happened in this film.
Oh, damn.
The way that it portrayed women.
But we'll get into it. I'm super down to hear that and talk about it. But Cillian Murphy, I feel like, is the obvious choice. And I feel like that's why we're not picking him. So I would disagree with the DRD right here. I feel like his performance as a lead has been in the moment. Like, it's been what? Like a decade plus of just building up with him doing incredible roles.
Oh, talking about Cillian Murphy.
As an actor. And now he finally got his lead. And I feel like he crushed it. I feel like he knocked it out the park.
He reminds me of that player that, like, you know, has always been the assist for the longest time, and then, like, he finally, like he's like Benzema, you know what I mean? Like, he just, like, walked in, like,
nah.
No, he's exactly like that. No, that's the right comparison.
He is not a Real Madrid player.
He's 100% like a Real Madrid player.
Cillian Murphy, he's had some lead roles, like 28 Days Later.
Yeah, but how long ago was that?
That was a long time ago.
Word. Like, literally, like, potentially last century, I think, or early aughts. We're 2023, my guy.
So what's your concerns about how women are portrayed in this play?
I just feel like it played too much into the trope of, like, women have to suffer to advance the man's story. And I feel like just, like, the women in the story were just kind of, like, they were just kind of, like, sexual objects. Like, Florence Pugh was a communist, but he was fucking her, and
he was making love to her.
Sure. And,
while reading Sanskrit.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's fire. That's what's up. Like,
that's the gossip.
That's not something. Right. Like, you know, that's the intellectual sex right there was probably off the charts. Yeah. But I don't know. I just felt like I was just like, oh, man, like, we're really. I don't know. I just kind of wanted more from their characters other than just. It just kind of just felt like they were. But I feel like this happens a lot in Christopher Nolan movies where the woman that he writes is just kind of there to serve as a plot device to
to further the man's, the protagonist, who's usually a man, his, to further his story.
But you understand that this movie is based off of a book.
Yeah.
And so then, like, Christopher Nolan may have had no choice but to portray this accurately and loyally to what the book is.
I don't know, but are we really saying that accurately and loyally Kitty is, like...
I just disagree with both of y'all. Like, right, yeah. I think Nolan did his thing. I think that in most movies, women do not get it, and they're, you know, get their fair shake, and they're usually portrayed as just sexual objects. But even when Florence Pugh was portrayed as a sexual object, she had deep, content matter. When she was speaking, it was very intellectual. It was, like, super important. They re-referenced it. They brought it back. They made it haunting. Like, her character, although when it comes to, like, how much screen time might be minimal, it had a huge impact. And it could have easily been left out of the film, and it wouldn't have changed the story at all. Yet, it was included, and it made it that much better. So, like, I think Emily Blunt's character also had a similar role where she, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they could have made them just these random women that, like, didn't have a story. But no, like, they kind of put them in the film. Like, I like, you know what part I like a lot about Emily Blunt? When there was a scene where he started to feel guilt for the death of Florence Pugh's character. And he started, like, having a breakdown. Like, he was riding a horse, and then he, like, kind of got off, and then he was starting to cry. And then she came up to him, right, like, right to his face, and she was like, yo, you can't sin and expect the world to sympathize for you. Like, man, the fuck up. And then she walked away. That shit was hard.
Yeah, I was digging that. I was digging that. Hard.
But, like, if I have a criticism to say, I mean, if there is a criticism to say it, like, first of all, you said something just now that, like, Florence Pugh's character could have been removed, and it wouldn't have changed the story anyway. Typically, yeah, they would call that cutting the fat. So, like, if you can cut the fat, like, cut it out, because it's pointless. It serves no purpose.
No, it serves a huge purpose.
So then you can't just remove her then. You need her in the
film. I meant from literally the story's point of view, like, the father of the atomic bomb. Like, that part could have been left out of the story, literally. Not left out of the movie. I think it was, like, an important part of the movie, and it made a big difference. It added depth to Oppenheimer.
Right, so then she is an important, integral part of the movie. Like, you can't cut her out. She has to be in it.
I agree. That's not what I said.
I don't think I understand what you said then. Because you said that, like,
I said
you could
literally,
remove her,
like,
story.
If you removed her story from the story, not the movie, mm-hmm. like, you know what I'm saying? Like, nothing would actually have changed. Like, he was still involved with the Communist Party without her through his brother. He was still building whatever he was building. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, in theory, like, that could have been not mentioned. And the movie wouldn't have changed. But I feel like because it was added, it made the movie better. It was such an extra layer.
It gave him more emotional depth.
That gave him more depth that he needed, because, as Monty's saying, he's probably a little bit flat as a person and not as a actor.
My problem with her role, though, is, like, I remember watching, like, the first hour of that movie, I think, and, like, we were introduced to her character, and then, like, we saw later on that they had a sexual relationship that became more than that, became a whole marriage. But so much of their life as a married couple was condensed so tightly that, like, it was almost hard to really empathize or even sympathize with the marriage that we barely even got to see. We understood what she meant to him later down the road when he had his breakdown, when we found out that she unalived herself. But, like, screen time itself, like, it kind of just went real, real fast. And I don't even think that's anyone's fault but Christopher Nolan's fault, right? Because, like, he kind of just, like, breezed by it. He didn't really allow that marriage to breathe on film for us to really, like, care about it. I didn't really care about it, to be real with you.
Like, I didn't even know they were married.
That's his first wife.
You guys all agree with that?
That's his first wife.
I had no idea.
That was known?
That was known. That was his first wife. And then they divorced, remember? And she was back there. What's her face?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so see, but, like, I was paying attention to the movie from that regard, because it was like, this is what I mean, right past her. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, I disagreed with the pacing of it, but again, like, going back to what Brian says, I know that you don't like the way that she was portrayed. Go ahead, what are you going to say?
No, just touching on that, I kind of wanted to ask a question, but you can keep going.
So my problem with, not my problem, but, like, my disagreement with Brian's statement is that, like, it's possible that Christopher Nolan maybe was handcuffed to the original source material, couldn't really do away with it, but had to include it in some way, and this was the compromise that he came up with. Unfortunately, he had to truncate her story, make her smaller, but still include her. Doesn't necessarily mean that he has a problem with her as a woman or her as a character. It just so happens that that's the source material, and that's what he has to work with, and that's what he has to do, so he did it. And then in terms of, what's her face? Kitty. My problem with Kitty, and, like, not my problem, but, like, it's clear that Kitty did not want to be a mom. She doesn't want to be a mom. Like, she was cool with the idea of having a child at in the moment, and then, like, she had to deal with the reality of being a mom. Meanwhile, Oppenheimer is out playing Dr. Manhattan, creating this atomic weapon, comes home, and then she's like, yeah, you know, like, I'm trying to, like... She was bodied, apparently. I don't know what she was drinking, but she was drunk as fuck. She was, like, in a table by herself, like, in the dark. And, like, she comes up to Oppenheimer trying to, like, get down with him. Meanwhile, there's this crying baby in the background. Oppenheimer then tells her, misogynistically, I guess, like, hey, like, shouldn't you go handle that? And she goes, I've been handling it all day, and, like, pushes him out of the way. And then his response to it is like, yo, like, let's get this child out of here real ASAP. And then that's what they do. They go over to Chevalier and his wife, and they're like, yo, can you, like, my marriage is falling apart. Can you just take this baby, please? Because, like, my wife is, like, she's not with it. And Chevalier's like, absolutely. We know that you're involved in really important shit, so, like, we'll definitely take the child. They take the child. And then that would be okay if it wasn't for what she said later, which is when they went to go and visit the child again, and they were like, oh, like, we love, I forget the child's name. She goes, oh, keep the baby.
What's wrong with this? All right, so
What's wrong with it is that, like, if she was really not ready, or if they were really not ready for having a child, then that's a conversation these motherfuckers should have had. And
are you judging their character out here? Like, yo, I mean, like that shit was portrayed out here, because that's such a common theme. Like, everybody wants to paint this fucking fairy tale life about having children and stuff like that. As soon as your baby's born, they're like, this is the best moment of my life. And that's not the case for a lot of women. Like, so I like that this story is shown, because postpartum depression is huge and it happens to everybody. And I would imagine it's fucking heightened when World War II is happening. You know what I'm saying?
And you're married to Oppenheimer.
And your man is creating the atomic bomb. Like, how can she be at peace with herself when she's at home with a crying baby as a first-time mother by herself in an isolated area in Los Alamos? Like, her situation was so fucked that I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt out here. And I like that it was shown, because that's realistic. I would have been weird if she was just taking the baby, like, in great strides, and then he came home and was like, hey, honey, baby's doing great.
I think my problem with just the portrayal of Nolan and how he portrays women in his films, that I would 1,010% agree with your point. If I didn't, like, it feels like it's a pattern, though. Like, in all of his movies, there's a woman, there's a damsel in distress who has to die in order for the male protagonist to further his story. Like, in Inception, you have Marion Cotillard. In the Dark Knight trilogy, you have Rachel Dawes. In fucking Memento, you have his wife and Carrie Ann Moss. In fucking what's this other movie?
Inception.
I already said that. In Interstellar, you have the kind of sort of pseudo thing that he's got going on with with Murph.
With his daughter.
Murph is
his
daughter. Murph. Anne Hathaway.
Oh, Anne.
Yeah, where it's just like Anne Hathaway literally has to fucking go to a deserted planet in order for this dude to, like, formulaically understand love. Like, I don't, like, you know what I mean? So it's just like, I don't understand why the woman is constantly truncated, why their story is constantly truncated in all of his films.
Shortened? Because by truncated, I mean shortened. Like, it's just small, and it's like an,
like, it's just like, yeah, yeah. It's just like, kind of like, it's just, and like, yeah, you're there because you were in the source material. But
I would argue that, like, at least in terms of Interstellar, like, Anne Hathaway's character was probably the most three-dimensional character in, like, all of his female, right? Like, I saw bits and pieces of Tenet. Fuck that lady, bro. Like, I don't remember. Like,
I haven't,
like,
seen
her.
Tenet,
yeah, so but, like, trust me, bro. Like, that, if you're talking, if you want a 2D female character, it's that movie in Tenet. Like, that's a, like, I'll give you that one, because that made sense to me. But, like, here's the thing. In terms of Batman, like, that's source material. Like it's well known that, like, he has a thing with, I don't even remember the latest character. Like,
Rachel Dawes?
But in comic books, like, who, like, doesn't he normally have, like, another side chick? Normally?
Seriously, with Catwoman.
Selena Kyle. Okay. So then, okay, that's fair. So he probably created her and made her. Okay, that's fair. I'll take that one. Inception, Marion Cotillard. Yeah, probably same thing too. But in terms of, but
then, what about Memento?
But Memento, okay, Memento. See, the thing with Memento is, like, that also is an original story about, I mean, a man and wife, right? It's like, so it's like, how do you?
I mean, I think that's even worse. If it's in, like, an original story, then it's like he's literally choosing to truncate the woman's story. As opposed where if it's, like, a source material, where I guess it's already been truncated for him.
This is not even just a source material. These are based on real life events.
So then my question to you, like, do you think he potentially opted to shoot this movie Oppenheimer specifically because, like, oh, this is a small female role, so let me make it smaller still?
I don't know. I think it was... I knew I felt interesting when I first saw the introduction to their married life, Oppenheimer and Kitty, as when he walked into the door and she, I guess from the scene, we were made to understand that she was an alcoholic mother that was tired of being raising this kid because her husband's never around.
Yeah.
And like, I get that that's what was happening during the time. I get it. But I don't know. I just felt like maybe he could have artistically showed that a different way than showing it the way that it's always been shown.
I think I understand what you're saying now about Oppenheimer, but like, for the sake of historical accuracy, I would rather see that than paint someone retroactively the way that we would want her to be today.
But I think it's dangerous when we say things like that, because it's just like, what are we saying, that because of historical accuracy, are we saying that these women, like, that was their role?
I mean, if how would you want it to be portrayed exactly?
I think it's just more than just like, I think the movie fails to grasp the magnitude. Maybe not Kitty. I think what Edward just said about Kitty was
facts.
Something that I hadn't thought about. But I think I'm taking more issue with Florence Pugh's character and how she was portrayed.
Well, again, I didn't read the book. I haven't read American Prometheus. I imagine that the movie itself is 3 hours long already.
Right.
Let's start there. Right. And so, like, if he's taking this sword, go ahead.
Like, let me ask you guys a question. Do you think we needed the sex scene? Did we need to see the sex scene?
Yeah. See, that was weird to me. And the reason it's weird to me is because there's a,
like,
quote.
Do you guys think it was gratuitous?
I don't think it was gratuitous.
Did we need to see it?
Probably not.
So I think if we didn't need to see it, then it's gratuitous.
I don't think we needed to see it twice. Maybe the first time between Oppenheimer and her, but that second time when they're in the private meeting and like
that shit was lit.
But like,
where we're talking to each other naked.
Because that was great fucking camera work, yo.
Oh, I mean, camera, yeah, visually, yo, it was great.
That was fire.
Visually,
go off, King, go.
All right, yo, I'm gonna pay a little homage to my boy Christopher Nolan real quick, yo, because that shit was kind of fire. They panned the camera towards him, and he was like admitting that he had an affair.
Yeah.
And then on the side, you can see Emily Blunt just looking down,
just reliving it.
And then at a quick moment, they like panned the camera to the back of the head of the dude that was asking the question, and then you saw her look up and look at him and just like fucking like laser eye beams of his skull head.
Yeah.
They fucking panned out away from his head and he was naked.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, that was fire. Then the light shined, and then she saw the sexual act that like that he was describing and making him feel like he could just portray that shit in this. Like, yo, she's like, why are you giving them that information? Why are you tearing down your own character? Why are you reliving this situation? And I was like, yo, I'm fucking with the shits that Emily Blunt was with, yo. She had this no filter. She was fire. I thought that scene was incredible, the way it was shot. All right.
I mean, I guess when you put it that way, then that scene definitely was not gratuitous. Like, it was, I guess, it we understand why it stoked her fire so much, right? Because that's what she saw. That's what was going on in her head, and that's what she saw. In terms of the first sex scene, was it gratuitous? I mean, I don't think it was like violent sex that we were watching. It was
more like artistic shit.
It was more like artistic. However, I know.
I mean, yeah, he read Sanskrit. Like.
But I know that there is a community of people out there that take issue with the fact that he take what I understand is supposed to be some manner of important text to a particular culture. And like, he read it out loud while performing a sex act, and I think a lot of people were unhappy about that. That's one of the main, if not the only, controversies that I'm aware of that is attached to this movie, is that he read that, which is supposed to be an important piece of literature to a particular culture, during a sex act, and people didn't like that. So in that respect, okay, fine. I guess that's gratuitous. My question though is, that quote that he quoted is a real quote that he said.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when, like, he was, they were interviewing him or whatever it was, he was giving up some manner of speech, and then he said, like, I remember watching the atomic blast, and I thought to myself, you know, from this particular book, like, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. That's what entered my mind when I saw this. And so my question is, like, is that the first time he read that when he was smashing Shorty? If we're going based off of the book that is the American Prometheus, like, is that facts? Is that actually happened? If it didn't happen, probably gratuitous.
I'm pretty sure that's not the way it happens.
Okay, well then in that case, then it's probably like unnecessary. I don't know what the point of it was. I mean, I guess, but like, you know,
but Nolan took liberties.
Yeah, fair. Nolan, but why there? Why did he take a liberty there? Like, why did he choose to do that? Like, if that's what he did, like, why did he choose to do that?
So with everything y'all touching on, right, which is a good valid points, it brings me to the question of which I like to ask when I'm on my own podcast, shameless plug. Like, do you think that any of you guys can answer? Like, do you think, based on everything that we just discussed and all so far on the last term subject, that was this movie really worth the 3 hours?
Yeah, ultimately, yeah. I think it
like,
was.
Like, you're satisfied with the 3 hours, or something should have been cut?
It didn't feel like 3 hours, though.
Yo, I go back and forth on this. That's such a great question because... Yo, at times I felt like the movie went by so fast.
Yeah.
Because the pace of the movie, everything was happening fast. Everything was fucking loud. Yeah. Everything was like, it was like mad action for a movie with no fucking action. It felt like a courtroom drama with no courtroom. Right. This shit was like wild. I was like, yo, this is mad feelings. I was like, I'm feeling right now. And every time I start feeling emotions, I'm like, yo.
This is lit.
Movies are lit, yo. Movies are lit. So I think in short, you didn't really cut anything. Like, you could probably say, like, you could trim, like, minor things out of each scene, but never a whole entire scene. So, like, no.
So, I feel like, yeah. I feel like the way that, like, Christopher Nolan does his movies, if you look at other movies that he's done, he kind of has that thing where, like, where if you take the scene objectively and you, like, cut it down to its most basics, nothing is happening. But the way that Christopher Nolan kind of, like, puts his films together, it feels like something is happening, right? Like, the music is right, the pace is right, the editing is right, like, things are moving from, like, point A to point B, but nothing's really happening.
That, you know why I feel like we feel that way? It's because this motherfucker always go out of order. Like, his...
Well, yeah, that too.
That's, like, his signature style. Like, when you try to fuck with the audience and see if they can catch him, like, figure out, like, it's like a riddle, and you're rewarded for saying, yo, I understood that movie. It's like, but I feel like, yo, that shit gets old. Like, here, I feel like that shit didn't need to happen. He did it, but not to the extent to his other movies, so I didn't feel completely lost enough to give up. Mm-hmm. But it was a challenge, especially without subtitles, because the audio at times, like, that's my only reason why I wouldn't be like, yo, this movie's better than Interstellar, honestly. Like, that's the only thing that would put I would say that this is, like, second best movie. Yes.
Wow.
This movie is fucking lit. But, like, the only thing is that
Above Dark Knight?
Yeah, man. Fuck, yo. All right, fuck it. I'm tired of all these comic book movies, yo.
Deadass.
Dark Knight was fire as hell, but it got watered down by the entire afterwards. He ruined the industry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't think he did that.
That was the start. That was the best comic book movie, and it's been downhill since.
Mondi is, like, disappointed right now. The DRD is so disappointed right now.
I'm gonna say that shit. I'm gonna say that shit with my chest.
That was a very good trilogy. It's hard to come by a good trilogy.
People shouldn't redo it every 5 years.
That's true.
It was done nicely, and now this man is, like, the fucking standard of Batman.
That no one seems to be able to. Well, except Robert Pattinson was.
And not only that, like, he was, like, Nolan had no background of, like, stuff like that. He just looked into it like a new person. Like, oh, let me just pick up a book here
and he fucking
slayed it. Like,
no, he bodied it. It's up there. I would put these movies ahead.
But you would still put Oppenheimer.
Look, I'm gonna leave that question for last. Like, I'm gonna ask y'all, you know, what's ranking. Gonna be your rankings of top Nolan films. We'll leave that for last.
Brian, you felt the 3 hours was justified, or like it could be shorter? Yeah, or longer.
Definitely not longer. But I don't know. I felt like, I think I said it to you guys when we were leaving the theater. A lot of fucking yapping in this movie.
Yeah,
like, there was a lot of fucking talking, and I personally don't have anything against a talking movie.
Right.
But at the same time,
so long as it taps the size.
I want to hear his butt. Yo, go.
So long as, like, number one, I deadass agree 1,000% with Edward. I wish I should have fucking had subtitles because I feel like I don't know what it is with me lately, but I just cannot watch a movie without.
It's not lately, Brian. You've been doing this for years. It's so have I.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't know, but I've always been this way. Like, I don't know what it is about, like that's kind of why I've just, not that I've stopped going to theaters, but I just wish there was a way for me to, like, watch actual some sure there is.
Well, side note, Christopher Nolan's been catching a lot of heat for his
Editing. Yeah, yeah, actually that's true too. So his audio
catching heat for what? For
his audio, his mixing, like his audio mixing.
What happened is the music usually overpowers the person's audio.
Yeah.
It's an improvement in this flick, but it's a trend.
Yeah. So, also, yeah, this is actually true. Yeah, this is actually mad true, because in the fucking The Dark Knight Rises, they couldn't tell Bane whenever he was talking, so... Then in Dunkirk 2, they had to, like, do some audio shit there, too. So, yeah, I don't know what it is with Nolan and his sound mixing or who his sound mixing guy is, but it needs to improve. But all in all, do I think the 3 hours is gratuitous? I think maybe... I want to, like, off the rip, I want to say yes, but then I think about the movie, I'm just like, what would I cut, though? Like,
right,
and
exactly.
And I don't know what I would cut. Yeah. So.
Yeah, everything that was in the movie, did you have more to say? Or you?
What I will say is this, and I spoke to you about this a little bit. I wanted to kind of just ask you guys real quick. So I asked my brother this the other day, and I was just like, if you guys, like, what would have seen the movie in 70mm? What would it have added to the experience?
I heard it's not that much of a difference. So I told a friend of mine that saw it in 70 millimeter, and I said I saw it in IMAX. Like, well, you're not missing much. You saw it in a good thing. You might have been fucked if you saw regular ass digital.
Yeah.
But we did the right thing by choosing IMAX, and if we saw 70 millimeter, then it would just been like a, you know, like a slight bonus.
So I've been reading.
You can read?
Yeah. Oh. Crazy. So I've been reading a lot about that, and I think one of my biggest gripes with this movie is the accessibility of it, right? Because I've been seeing a bunch of these headlines about the movie, about how the experience that you want to have whilst experiencing this movie is the 70 millimeter movie going experience, right?
Right.
But then at the same time, I'm just like, we saw it in IMAX. I thoroughly enjoyed what I saw. So how much better would the experience have been if we would have seen it in 70 millimeter? Now, this leads me to another point where I'm just like, if this was part of the market for the movie, which it was, I feel. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, like you would agree?
I agree.
I feel like this was very gimmicky in Nolan's part
to market it in this way.
So I'm gonna leave it at that. And y'all can.
No. It's that. Here's the thing, though. That man loves shooting shit in IMAX. Every time I see this guy, people got a big ass camera and it says the fucking word IMAX on it. He's known for that. Like, there's nothing you can do about it. Like, it's just
right. But
it
I
is.
Think Brian's question is like, does he use it as a gimmick now, and it doesn't really add anything to the movie?
No, maybe it's like maybe it's his preference. Who knows?
Because in my head, right, the only scene I think that would have benefited from watching this movie in 70 millimeter would have been the actual bomb exploding scene. Yeah. But otherwise,
so I can answer the question.
Okay.
So the 70 mm would have made certain scenes widescreen and then full screen. So you would have been more back and forth between that, which would have made it more dynamic. Mm. Apparently, the scenes in black and white are more crisp and more like, you know, the black and white and the grays and everything. Like,
it's true
way more. Yeah, just way more crisp on the eyes. And yeah, the explosion scene would have been more detailed. And that's about it. So you're not being robbed. You just would have been.
It would have been enhanced.
Yeah, it would have been enhanced.
Yeah, like my whole thing about the 70 mm is like, I think about the one movie that I'm happy, like over the moon happy.
See, yeah, and this is go on.
That we saw in true IMAX was Interstellar. Like, when we saw Interstellar in true IMAX, like, I felt. First of all, let me just. Well, what are you saying?
Like, when I think about 70 mm, I'm like, in my head, I'm just like, see, Interstellar is the movie I feel.
That's the benchmark.
To really experience it in 70 mm.
Right. Something
I
about,
don't think Oppenheimer is that movie.
Oh, I'm so ready.
Something about Interstellar, bro, like, was a. Damn near, it's not it, but damn near a religious experience. Like, when I saw that shit, I was like, yo, this is outstanding. And I'm more than happy that we saw it in IMAX, right? Now, comparing it to Oppenheimer, nothing about the movie itself told me, damn, I wish I would have seen this in 70 millimeter. Brian, like you said, I think the bomb explosion was like lit. Right, but we saw it, and then that was the end of it. And that, you know, that was like a whole like 5 minute scene. He said, "Oh well." After that, like nothing left. So like, no, I don't think we missed anything from not watching it in 70 millimeter.
Hold on a second, yo. Speaking of that, am I the only one that had like super high expectations for the bombing scene.
I wanted to see three bombs.
So, something, I don't know what it was. I don't usually let that happen to me. Like, have high expectations. I usually go in there.
It was hype for the bombing.
Bland as fuck. Yeah. But for that scene, I was like, I was waiting, right? I felt like that, like, one of those kids that, like, that he stood up all night in Christmas and he got the fucking wackest gift on the planet.
Really?
That's how I felt. Because I was like,
damn, that's a lot.
I was like, wait. No, because again,
I feel you though.
It's my fault.
I feel you though.
It's my fault. I hyped myself up. I'm thinking in my, I'm winding myself in my head.
But it wasn't just Mondi hyping himself up. It was
the world.
The world was hyping up bomb explosions.
Well, look, like, and to be real, like, I think people that market movies ride off the coattails of people self-marketing, right? They themselves create the hype sometimes.
Nah, man. I was looking at headlines being like, oh, Nolan actually did, he actually made an atomic bomb. There are no CGI shots. When you're in the theater, you're going to feel that shit.
Yo,
like,
I thought
the theater itself might explode. Like, there was hype behind
it. I mean, I know that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
but
I know,
like,
either, but like, it does play on your subconscious though a little bit.
I thought,
like,
I don't know what it was. I think, here's what I thought I was going to experience. I thought that though, the speakers are going to be fucking loud as shit, that I was going to blow my fucking ears. And then I was kind of, it sounds weird, but I was kind of looking forward to be blinded by this movie. Like, oh shit, I can't see. It's so fucking bright. Like, I wanted something spectacular.
That wasn't spectacular for me. I was kind of sort of expecting three explosions. I was expecting the test, and then the Hiroshima and the Nagasaki bombing. That's what I was expecting.
Yeah.
Those three. That's what I was expecting.
I'm ready, y'all. Mass slander out here.
But hold on. To answer Brian's original question, or someone's original, I don't even know what it was. No, I think 3 hours is fine. But, like, I also have, like, I have the stomach for long movies. Like, I'll watch a long movie for fun. Like, I love that shit. You know what I mean? So, like, in this particular 3-hour movie, like, I didn't really feel like it was 3 hours. I think it went by just fast or just right. I think, like, the yapping that Brian talks about, like, I hear what y'all are saying about, like, I wish that movie theaters would offer a closed caption version of the movie. I'm sure they could do it.
They do.
Oh, well.
It probably would have been regular on digital.
Oh, that's why. But in any event, like, I'll probably do that next time. Like, if I'm going to watch a movie and it turns out that, like, they offer it in a closed caption, I'm going to watch that way. But in any event, like, part of the reason why I liked the movie so much, because yes, it was 3 hours kind of like of yapping, but like, it's yapping that mattered. It's yapping that, like, really put into context the whole story of Oppenheimer and, like, his people. It was very necessary. There wasn't really any fat to cut, and I think that's important to me. And if it happens that you need to be able to explain this story in 3 hours, then so be it, and I'm okay with it. So that's how I feel about that.
I usually love to ask that question, because for maybe not the person that's like you that will be down to watch Godfather 2 or in the middle of the night.
Always ready.
2 a.m.
Or 2 a.m. as he was saying. But there's other people out there that probably would, timing could be a positive or a negative depending on the person. But, like, you know, it's kind of hard because a lot of people were doing this whole, what's that shit called? Barbenheimer thing. A lot of people would be like, oh, Barbie is blah blah blah, let me go see that. And then, you know, whoever chose to see Oppenheimer like we did, it's just like, you know, we were looking for, I mean, at least I was looking for, like, you know, something spectacular, which I still did, even though I wasn't, my expectation wasn't met with the bomb scene, but I still thought, like, I had a good time. And I didn't really think much of the 3 hours, like, because it was like, at first it was slow and then it went kind of fast and then it went, like, it was up and down for me, but it didn't make me feel like I had to look at the time a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Sure not.
I don't know. I got a lot to say, yo.
So say it.
Say it. Fucking say it.
Ever since Avatar came out.
Oh, wow.
Damn, CGI has been the bane of my existence. It's been the bane of my existence. I think it's ruined the movie going experience for me. I don't remember.
Not comic books?
No, because I feel like that's part of it.
Okay.
I feel like that's part of it. Because even before then, comic book movies were cool. And they probably still are to people that are deep fanatics of the comics themselves. And I don't want to take that away from people that find joy within the movies. This is not for me. You know? I want to separate myself from that, all right? And CGI has been like, it's been like a flex. You know what I'm saying? Like, back in the day, it was like, yo, look how much money I spent on CGI.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
And look at these special effects. I'm going hard.
Yeah.
I feel like now it's kind of like the opposite, or the less CGI you use, the more impressive it is.
Right. Yeah.
And if the claims are true that there was zero CGI in this movie, zero.
That's what you're saying.
That's what they're saying.
Zero.
It is impressive. That is
the most impressive shit I've ever seen in my life. Because he detonated a real fucking bomb.
Yeah. And just made it look like
for the art.
He did. He detonated a real bomb. And then there was all these cool little scenes where they would like zoom in on particles and stuff when he was having like anxiety attacks. And he would see like atoms splitting.
Yeah, I asked my brother that too. I was just like, was that CGI? Like how? But how?
I don't know. He must have took zoomed in shot.
Of some kind of film strips and like poked out through whatever. Like I hear what you're saying, but creatively he made it look like something that like that you can't just CGI. See anywhere. So I agree. Yeah,
including like. Frames looking like they were shaking and stuff like that from his crippling anxiety and all the sound.
But then I feel like that kind of like, I'm sorry, what were you gonna say?
No, I was just gonna, I'm gonna keep on raving about it, but like you got something to say.
Well, so my question is this about that, right? So you bring up a good point. Like his movie, this particular movie was done, no CGI. Fine. So then why then do you feel the need to include IMAX in this?
Like that then I don't, you could really appreciate really a real bomb going off. Because you're so used to fake explosions, yeah, I forgot what a real one looked like. So and this was what it is.
So do you think maybe the IMAX experience enhances the fact that this is not CGI, but it's real? So here's this thing that you can see that just makes this look bigger.
It is big. It was huge.
Right. Well, yeah.
It was a pillar of smoke. That's real.
10,000.
I really feel like that is this man's preference. It's just that I don't really think. Well, when it comes down to coming to your home in digital, we lose that experience. So he's really saying that he's preferencing to always shoot his movie in IMAX because he wants you to experience what he experienced through his own lens in the theater. He wants you to go to the theater. Yeah. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because once that shit comes on TV, I highly doubt it. I'll watch it. I mean, if I do, I'll be like, well, I don't know if I'm missing out on anything. Like,
I feel like that's when the subtitles kick in. That's the only time I rewatch it. I want to rewatch it for the story. When I left, one of the main takeaways was I didn't understand who the fuck the spy was. Then like I started watching some video essays and reviews and I found out who it was. But like, I kind of got lost a little bit in the story without the subtitles. And that's the only reason I would rewatch it. But I wouldn't rewatch it until a couple years from now. Like, I'm good.
Facts.
Yeah, like
I'll watch it tomorrow.
You watch it tomorrow. I wouldn't. I mean, you can if you want to get like a deeper understanding of the man, but I'd rather just read the history itself at this point. I'd rather read the book.
Yeah.
Than to rewatch the flick.
Right? You know, like just talking about this movie, I kind of wish like I had read the book too, so then I would know to really like dive more deeply into this.
You know, the more that we talk about it, the more I'm realizing like, damn, I don't think I fuck with this movie. I think there was a lot of jacking.
Jacking?
No one did. Yeah.
I have a crazy ass take, but
yeah.
I was gonna say this, but
like when I saw the movie, right, I was just like, alright, he's doing like a cross. Nolan is doing like a cross between like There Will Be Blood and Doctor Strangelove. And I just didn't really fuck with it really. Like
that's a crazy ass comment.
Yeah. And you would think that that combination would yield better results, but instead it yielded Oppenheimer, I guess. And I'm just like, well,
there's something that I heard someone say once that I think about it now, and like, unfortunately, I think it's true. Mm-hmm. And everything is copy. You know what I mean? So it's like you can't, like, it's hard, especially.
I get what you're saying, but this coming from a person who markets themselves as such an auteur that all of their films is an experience. I would think that there is a kind of a sense of like an originality where there isn't copying happening here, and that's why this movie is being billed as such an experience.
I'm curious, as you're such a big fan of There Will Be Blood, right? Mm. Like, I would imagine that's one of your top five movies.
Yes,
if I had to guess. What did you feel was Swagger Jack from that flick?
Just like the whole story, really. Like
the
like,
whole story,
yeah,
all of it.
Yeah, like. Robert J. Oppenheimer is the Daniel Plainview of that story.
But Robert J. is a real person.
Yeah. Well, the way Daniel Plainview is portrayed in There Will Be Blood makes him feel like a real person to me too. But that's neither here nor there.
That's just acting.
I mean, hey, if you can act and make the person feel real, I don't see why anyone
can disagree
with you.
I got a better Swagger Jacker moment. Y'all seen The Imitation Game?
Yes.
I've seen bits and pieces, not all of it. Yeah.
This is just this movie on steroids.
Oh, damn.
Okay. From the perspective of the Americans.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Those were just mathematicians behind the race.
But now my question to you is this. So, like, is the Imitation Game based on a true story?
Yes. From World War II.
It's hard.
Mathematicians.
But it's people that broke the code. I have a hard time calling Swagger Jack on two events that happened. If they happened as they happened, then, like, it's hard to swagger jack something that occurred.
It's
like,
history.
Right, it's history. Right. So, like, and things sometimes, there's another thing that I hear a lot sometimes too, is that sometimes great minds think in parallel. So, like, maybe they don't know about each other, but they're thinking the same thing at the same time.
Right.
And so, like, it's possible that, like, you know, and especially given the subject matter, if this Imitation Game is about World War II, right?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
So, like, okay, fine. So then they each had a common enemy, which was Hitler and Nazi Germany. And just generally speaking, fascism. And so, like, they're going to put their greatest minds to work and figure out how it is that they can either break a code or put together an atomic weapon, or rather beat Nazi Germany to the bomb. And they did. So, like, I have a hard time, like calling that. I agree with what you're saying. Like, maybe stylistically. Would you say stylistically was the same?
Just a very similar movie.
Just a very similar movie. Okay.
No, well, that's just but
I think Nolan directed it better than whoever directed Imitation Game.
Yeah. My Swagger Jack. And this is, and again, like, it's not even a Swagger Jack, really. There is a link between these two movies. There's a very direct link between these two movies that I'm about to mention. I'm talking about the communistic angle, or rather the angle that Oppenheimer took in discussing his potential for communist activities in the past. And another movie by the name of Good Night and Good Luck. Good Night and Good Luck is... Which also stars Robert Downey Jr. And also has... Well, Night and Good Luck is all black and white. This particular movie, all the scenes that Robert Downey Jr.'s character is in black and white. And, you know, I don't have a problem with it. That's fine. Because, again, Oppenheimer is a true story. And, frankly, Good Night and Good Luck is a true story. And so, like, you know, both of those movies talk about how there was this Red Scare that occurred during the 1950s where people thought... We need to, like, excommunicate anyone that has had any manner of communication or any kind of association with communist activities, period. Like, we need to get rid of them ASAP because communism is the evil of the entire planet. And, like, it just so happens that Oppenheimer had a lot of associates that were part of the Communist Party back in the 1930s. Because in the 1930s, you have to remember, Communist Russia, rather the Soviet Union and the U.S. were allies because they had a common enemy in the face of Hitler. And so, like, you know, they had to ally themselves with one another because they had this common enemy to be rid of. And so, like, you kind of make uneasy alliances, right? Like, there are people within Oppenheimer's group of people that, like, had these special relationship with Soviet scientists, and they would, and then through other people would tell Oppenheimer, yo, like, it's kind of fucked up that the American government won't go through official channels and tell us what they've discovered about the bomb, but, you know, maybe you can tell me, and then I can tell them unofficially, like, what you know about the bomb, and then, like, you know, we can circumnavigate this whole official channel bullshit. But Oppenheimer felt funny about it. He didn't like the fact that the American government and Soviet Russia weren't, like, sharing information with each other officially, but he still had enough loyalty to the country to not just give that information up, right? And so I look at a movie like The World Be Blood. You look at a movie like Good Night and Good Luck, and it's the same thing. It's about people that may have communist, not necessarily sympathies, but communist associations, and they know people who are communists, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are communists, and therefore, like, they must be crucified and taken away and, like, tarred and feathered. And so I think in that regard, it's Swagger Jack, but at the same time, they're both based in real life, and they're both based in the 50s, and so, like, it's hard
to avoid that.
With the notable exception of you've included both Robert Downey Jr. in both those movies. That's really about it. That's the only way with Swagger Jack.
I don't think any of these are Swagger Jacks.
No, it can't. I think it's hard to Swagger Jack something that happened.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I think this movie's authentic. I don't see no Swagger Jack in it. I think it's in its own lane, and, you know, if it went according to the book, then I guess the book nerds out there would probably confirm if they played it to the letter or not. But to me, I didn't really see like that. I saw it like its own, you know, authenticness and all the glamour and how it was shot and everything. I always appreciate a good cinematography, and this man did his thing to me, so I have no inquiries or about Swagger Jacket.
I kind of have a question though, now that I think about it, right? Like, a lot of like conservatives like to think that, you know, Hollywood or Hollyweird, as you like to call it, is very like left leaning, even very communist in ideology and all that stuff. Do you think this kind of movie kind of gives the conservative right the justification to say that?
Yeah, they're gonna go with that. It's like, oh, this is combating the Sound of Freedom.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So essentially, you got a movie. Because there was a point where Oppenheimer made a dope point, and maybe this would show you my political leanings. But he was like, oh, if I had to go towards communism or fascism, I would lean towards the left. Mm. And I just feel like, yeah.
Like lean towards the left, or yeah, lean towards full blown communism?
Because I don't, just said I would lean left.
Left. Okay.
Yeah. When so like, talking about the two extremes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would lean that way. I would lean towards communism.
Okay.
And that's why he's been mingling with the communists.
But not. But why didn't he fully become one though? Because he never did.
Because he didn't want to commit to the idea. He wanted to think about why it was happening. Yeah, why he liked the concept of the thought.
But it's cafeteria communists.
No, I thought it was because the
cafeteria comments. So he picks and chooses.
Like, he called it something himself.
Oh, he might have, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah, he did. He did. Yeah, I don't remember what it was. Yeah.
I thought it was because Josh Hartnett's character's pressing him. He's like, you can't, like, what we're about to do, like, you can't be on that communist
oh,
shit.
Oh, that's true.
You know, I forgot Josh Hartnett.
Maybe he did pump the brakes on it as possible.
There was something that Josh Hartnett. There was a lot of moments in this movie that were quotables that I'm gonna fucking put on my Instagram bio, like, soon. But there was something that Josh Hartnett said in the movie to Oppenheimer that I was just like, well, like Edward just said, like that, they're like, what Edward just revealed might have revealed a little bit about his political standing. And I think what Josh Hartnett said to Robert J. Oppenheimer can reveal a little bit about my political standing. But he had said something to him along the lines of like, I think he had just squashed, Josh Hartnett's character had just squashed like an attempt for all of the scientists to like unionize or something like that. Right. And he was explaining to Robert J. Oppenheimer, he was like, look, like I'm not saying that I'm for this, or rather I'm not saying that I'm against this, but I'm the kind of person that I want to vote for it and not talk about it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, damn, like that's kind of how I think a lot of people feel about a lot of topics in this country.
I mean, most people are policymakers, and the majority of people are just voters. Like, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, but I think you don't see a lot of movies kind of put that into context, like to contextualize it, to kind of like put that out there. I don't think I don't know why that line resonated so much with me, and it's not so much that it resonated with me, but it's just like when he said that, I was just like, oh yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way, and I've just never heard someone vocalize it in that way.
I think I'm glad that you brought that up, because I completely forgot about it. But like, taking it into context with like what we're talking about right now in terms of like communism in the movie and like communism in general, I agree. Like, I agree with what he says, in that like you can agree with something, you can vote on it, but you can still be pragmatic and know what side your bread is buttered on.
And I think that's what he was ultimately trying to say, like, right. there are things that I wholeheartedly believe in, right? But if I were to exclaim them out loud,
it would get in the way of other things.
Yeah, and it does put you in a rock and a hard place, because you should be able to exclaim these things out loud and not be persecuted for these opinions that you may hold. But that's not the reality that we live in, this country.
Which is so interesting to me about Oppenheimer, because like Oppenheimer is like this, to my opinion, like a very objective, by the book, very like pragmatic, practical astrophysicist, right?
Yeah.
No, you don't think so?
Dude tried to kill his teacher in the beginning.
Oh, that's true. Oh, like, well,
he put poison in an apple.
That's true.
He's clumsy. He's like, he tried to give up his child. Like, they showed the human side of him. They wasn't just his hero. It was like
his human side.
Like that he was flawed. You know what I'm saying? Okay, like you know what I'm saying? Like, nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
So they showed. I mean, they showed a bunch of depth to his character, and a lot of it was questionable.
I wanted to ask you guys this question too, because I've been struggling with this as well, and I struggled with it as I was watching the movie, and I think I'm struggling with it even more now that we're having this conversation. But this is my question.
I struggle
to you
with
guys.
You, though.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I don't plan to be easy for nobody. But anyways, Do you guys feel...
No.
Should we celebrate Oppenheimer?
Oh, man.
And is this film... The fact that this film was made, not the contents of the film, but just the very fact that it was made, does that consign it to a celebration of the father of the atomic bomb?
So I read a headline, only the headline. Unfortunately, I don't read articles now anymore, but like I read the headline and someone said, this movie is the most important movie of the century.
I disagree.
Right. Okay. It's OD. However, if someone can just contextualize that for me and tell me why they feel that's the case, like,
because Nolan Dick writers, bro. Like,
yo,
no,
man. Yeah, sleep, yo.
Damn.
You think it's one of the it's the
one
best
of the
movie?
Most important movies of in the terms century? Of importance. In terms of importance, the historic event that happened is the most. It was one of the most important events. That's why mad movies are made about this. Mm-hmm.
No, but we're talking about the movie, not the historical event that the movie's based off. The movie.
This quote that I'm telling you about says that the movie is one of the most is the most important movie of this century. We're not talking about the historical event, just the
like
movie.
Any movie that came out from 2000 and up, right?
Yeah.
All right. What's the movie that's more important? Like,
There Will Be Blood.
Yeah. It's the same movie.
It's literally it's not true.
Movie. It's the
so
same.
So this
movie.
Is a true story about one of the most important times in human history, right?
Yeah.
Literally the most important time in human history to this date, probably. So right now, like, we can argue about what might be close and things, but this is up there, right?
Yeah.
So if you're talking about literally the race of how it happened and how this atomic bomb went down,
yeah,
and the aftermath of it, which was just as important,
yeah,
and how it ended with the guy that we haven't discussed at all, but Albert Einstein, mm-hmm, was the only person that could understand what my boy was going through, yeah, Oppenheimer, because, yeah, he said, you know what I'm saying, like, in a nutshell, he was like, yo, they're gonna turn on you, and then they're gonna try to be like, yo, you good, and then whatever. So in terms of like the importance of the character, it's a story that needed to be told. It was a person that most people don't know about, Oppenheimer.
Like, well, yeah, I get all that, but like, the most important movie of the last 100 years?
I'm not going to flat out say that.
That's 23.
But I would...
This century.
Yeah, 23 years.
Is that what they're saying? This century, yes, or...
Yes.
Of this century.
The last movie,
but isn't the century 100 years?
The 21st century.
The movies that came out since the year 2000.
Since 2000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would say that it's up there in terms of importance, right? And then in execution, I think it was executed really well. Mm-hmm. So I just think this is a movie that will grow on people, and in hindsight, y'all gonna be like, damn, that shit was kind of fire. And the subject matter is super important. Like, we got to know the nuance of this guy's whole life, of one of the most important people in the history of the world and the history of time. He's gonna go down in the books. Like, as history goes on, his importance is gonna rise.
Yeah. I mean, so...
Barbie, yo. Barbie.
Chill out. Have you seen Barbie yet?
Yeah.
You've seen Barbie?
Yeah.
Most important movie of the century.
I'll put it above Oppenheimer.
You're wild. We're wild.
I'll put it above Oppenheimer all fucking day. Let's go.
We're talking mad mirror.
That's why it grossed. That's why it grossed more than Oppenheimer. It was good.
Oh, yeah, because that's what you stand by, right? Right. Things, whatever make more money is more important.
No, but I know that's what you stand by.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, right. Oh, please.
So I don't know, bro. Like, my thing about this movie is, like, you know, it's a fantastic film. I really like the movie. Most important movie of this century. I think I agree with what Ed says. Like, the event itself, I think probably the most important event in human history, right? Because, like, it's sad that, like, the most important event in human history is the thing that can wipe out all of humanity, right? That's kind of wild. But like, you know, in terms of the movie itself, like, we were just talking about just now, like a moment ago, like, if I had to pick a movie that's like the most important of this century, truly, it's probably There Will Be Blood, in my personal opinion. They're not the same. Like, I wouldn't call them the same. I know you want to say that they swagger jack, but they're not. Like, they're not the same. I'll say that. But like, I definitely think the movie is like, it's up there. I think it's important. Unequivocally.
Why would you
important.
Say it's important? What here's makes it important. Like,
here's
what makes
why.
It a must-watch for every single person ever.
Here's why. All right.
Like,
and like, and this, and this is anecdotal to me personally, and anecdotal.
That's what it sounds like. That's why I'm questioning. Man.
So like, my thing is this, right? Like, I knew about the atomic bomb. I knew about like the making of it. I knew that like it was known as the Manhattan Project. And that's really about it. I knew who Oppenheimer was. I knew who Heisenberg was. I knew who Einstein was. I just didn't know how they fit into the role of the creators of the bomb. And it isn't until this movie that I if we believe that the movie as it is, this is the first time that I ever saw that like Einstein wasn't involved in the bomb at all. And for the last like 37 years of my life, I thought Einstein was like
his theories are the base for what everybody else started doing.
I wouldn't say that he.
Without him, they couldn't get him.
They wouldn't have.
He didn't get any government clearance. He wasn't.
No, he wasn't involved.
He wasn't. That's what I'm talking about, though. But like, what I understood about the bomb previous to this movie was that like he was in the lab with these cats, talking about theory, talking about this is how we're gonna make this happen and all this stuff. Like, I didn't know Teller. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I knew Oppenheimer, but I didn't know how he was involved. I thought Heisenberg was an ally. I didn't know that he was part of Nazi Germany. You know, like, I didn't know these things. So in that respect, in that regard, I think the telling of the movie was very important, because now we have our ducks in a row, and now we know exactly what went down and why it went down. And not only that, but we also know that after the making of the bomb, this American hero then became an American enemy, potentially even a Soviet spy, because people thought that he was a communist, right? I didn't know none of that at all. And so, like, I think, like, in to that degree, I think it was an important telling. But, you know, calling it the most important movie of the century—that's
crazy, that's though. That you just answered that question that I asked, and by basically saying you were enlightened by the film.
Yeah, but
I ask you to defend There Will Be Blood as an important.
I don't really want to hear your answer.
Steamrolled it. Taking up mass space. All right, go ahead. Hey, yo, son. I think we should go with our lights.
Wait. Hold on. I said earlier that
you had a question
before we do all that.
I want to see ranking. What's
everybody. No, I'm not gonna do it. All the fucking films. I'm just gonna cut it like this.
Let's do it.
What's
everybody's
top five?
Top five?
With the first one being the one that you love the most of all Nolan films.
Interstellar 1.
Okay. Second place.
I'm gonna give it to Oppenheimer. Number 3, I'm gonna go with Memento. Number 4, I'll go with Dark Knight. 5.
It's an Inception, though.
Nah, I'm not gonna put Inception there, bro. That shit didn't resonate with me, yo. That shit hypnotized me. Damn, dog. I don't know. I have to come back to the 5 out there. I gotta look at
it. Ron, would you like to take the next round?
Yeah, man. I think number 1 for me is gonna be The Dark Knight. Number 2 is gonna be Inception.
Inception?
Yes.
You're a clown.
I don't know what it is with y'all in that movie, but when I saw them, like, I think what y'all felt, not saying that Interstellar didn't give me this feeling too, but when I saw Inception, I think that to me was more like the feeling that y'all got for Interstellar.
That being said,
I'm gonna put Interstellar at number 3. Actually, no, I'm gonna put The Prestige at number 3. Put Interstellar number 4.
Why don't you just call it last, nigga?
And put Following at 5.
Yikes. I'll circle back and just add The Prestige. That's 5.
Prestige is 5.
Yeah. I gotta rewatch it, though.
Yeah, sure. Interstellar, like I said, is the closest thing to a religious experience that I've received at a movie theater. So, like, Interstellar is number 1. Number 2 is The Dark Knight. I think, hands down, The Dark Knight was, like, everything surrounding The Dark Knight was OD, because people had so many doubts about Heath Ledger's Joker, and everyone was committed to the fact that the movie was going to flop hard body. And then the movie we see Heath Ledger, we're like, yeah, that's the Joker, that's him, that's been the Joker forever, like, that's the guy. And I think that in and of itself was like is worthy of second place, right? The only reason it's not first is because he created Interstellar as well, and Interstellar just edges it out. So there's that. So Interstellar's first, Dark Knight is second. Probably Memento is 3rd to me. Prestige is 4th. And Dunkirk is 5th.
You really think Dunkirk is better than Oppenheimer?
I have more of a connection to Dunkirk than I do to Oppenheimer for some reason. Like, I can't really explain it.
Mondi?
I just want to see how much of your chest he was going to use.
I use it all.
All right. So, my number one movie that Nolan made, believe it or not, is The Prestige.
Nice. Number one. Wow. Yes.
That's a good movie.
I love that fucking movie.
Fucking movie's amazing.
I could watch that movie 1,000 times. Yeah. Just like Carly. Yeah. And then second place. I originally had The Dark Knight at second place, but it can be easily swapped for Interstellar. So those two keep changing second and third place, in my opinion. Right now, like, the more I think about it, I'm just gonna say Dark Knight is second place. I might change my mind, like, God knows how many times, but Dark Knight second place, Interstellar third, and yo, believe it or not, fourth place, I like The Dark Knight Rises because of Bane. I could quote all his shit all day.
That's true. That's
good. And then because this movie aged well, and I know what y'all probably gonna start saying when number five, but number five is Batman Begins. I think it aged well, and it was something that it was at a time where I was like really, because of the, you know, the whole, what's his fucking name? Schumacher?
Joel Schumacher?
Joel Schumacher and all his things. Like, I didn't want to. I didn't want to know no more about Batman and shit. And then when I saw this guy come out of nowhere, I remember, I think me and Isaac went to see some movie back in the day, you know, some random shit. And then we saw the trailer, and I was like, what is this, about a ninja and shit? And then Nolan's name came, and I was like, okay. And then I saw Christian Bale, and I was like,
no one knew
American Psycho, okay. And then next thing you know, I was like, when the fucking, when they hit you with the goddamn words at the end, like, movie's about Batman? I was like, I was sold just by the trailer. I don't really fuck with trailers like that. And I was like, I was sold. And I was like, and then I think I told you guys, because it's like its anniversary came around or some shit like that. And like, I saw it and I was like, this movie aged well. So
Did see it most recently.
Yeah, for me, this was number five.
So you got the whole trilogy in your top five?
Yeah, I was just about to ask. You got the trilogy in your top five?
That's what I'm saying. Most people be like, all right, this motherfucker's a comic book head. I mean, I am, but like, it's not because of that. Like, the order is like, you know, hello, I got Prestige as number one.
That's respectable, man. His comic book trilogy is...
I remember the 04, 05, 06 era was mad lit, right? Because it was Batman Begins, it was Constantine, and it was Sin City. And those three followed each other back to back to back.
What a time. But yo, for real, we haven't been... Like, when's the last time you went to a movie in theaters and left? Like, yo, it's lit. Like,
oh, yeah. I don't remember. A long time.
So I'm happy I did that.
Infinity Pool, like...
No, like, oh, you went to the theater. Yeah. I actually saw, before this, actually, I went to go and see, believe it or not, No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, yeah?
And it's actually a pretty good movie, bro. It's actually pretty funny. It's a pretty good
movie.
I heard
it broke some records, yeah.
Yeah, and like, I'm just...
an R-rated film.
It was one of those movies that I thought about you, Ed, when you were like, yo, you know what I haven't seen in a long time? A movie, dog. Like, a movie. Just like a movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is that.
Yeah, I also got that feeling. I also thought about you when I saw Infinity Pool. I'm just like, this is the movie. Like, this is what Edward wants. Like,
yeah. You know, the fact that you guys mentioned that, the last movie I seen in theaters that made me feel that way, believe it or not, is this movie called The Covenant by Guy Ritchie. You
know? Slayed
that shit.
Yeah.
And your boys in there, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, nice.
Anyway.
All right, so now
shall we do the lights?
To it,
yeah,
yo.
Yeah.
Final lights?
Yes, sir.
Before the light turns?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Edward Cito, you kicked us off. Kicked us off.
Well, I think I got, like, you know, super green still.
Super green
still. I think, I hope I helped convince somebody. I don't know, man. I feel like, all right, I'm not with the...
With
your opening statement that Christopher Nolan is still weak and the type of yellow and all that stuff, like, I wasn't with that, and I wasn't with the other extreme that it was best movie, most important movie of the century, but I'm leaning to the right.
To the right.
it's up there. Those are the two extremes, though.
So what's your life?
He said green.
Super green.
Hard green. Yeah, hard green.
Brian Seaton?
I'm gonna stay with the yellow.
Yellow, straight yellow.
Yeah, I'm just.
Do you want to explain? You just said you just yellow.
I think Monty kind of said it for me. I think I was expecting a little bit more from the bomb explosion because I feel like it was really hyped. And that's kind of what makes me question the lingering hesitation in my head. I was just like, damn, had I seen this in 70mm, would the bomb scene have been what I thought it would have been?
But so much so that it would tip you to green. Maybe. Just that itself.
Maybe.
So the story itself. didn't really.
No, the story was like, yeah, and I know like you guys will combat me tooth and nail, but it's just like I've seen the story already. Like, and it's there will be blood. Like, it's so this weird is because, there will like, be blood.
You've seen the story and you say there will be blood, and yeah. I'll say I've seen the story, but it's conniving the blood. Yeah. So like I'm just having a hard time finding your correlation between.
Just like just real quick, just like the whole like this is Robert J. Oppenheimer. Like the story is about hubris. Like, you know what I mean? Robert J. Oppenheimer is a man that he's the only one that can do this. Like, you know what I mean? Okay. Daniel Plainview was the only one that can get to that oil. Okay. Daniel Plainview literally takes other oil well men to a remote fucking land so that they can get the oil. Robert J. Oppenheimer does the same thing with these scientists and physicists. They go to a remote fucking land to test this thing. Like, it's the same. They have cranes.
There's different motives behind it. Like,
the motive, Edward, is hubris. That's the motive. They are the only people in their minds that feel that they could do this, and no one else should be allowed to do it. Because if the Nazis have the power to do it, who knows what would happen. But is it any safer in Oppenheimer's hands? Probably not. It's not.
And I always want to hear the comp. That's why y'all always do that.
So what are you talking about?
All right, and then explain the same thing for
I just Daniel did.
For Daniel Plainview.
It's not the hubris is Daniel Plainview's downfall in the movie.
I mean, like I said, it's the intentions and the like. It's the whole moral thing behind it that makes this movie great. I don't think it's like I don't think that happens in There Will Be Blood, because There Will Be Blood is like just a capitalistic movie. Whereas, like,
it's not though. Have you really seen There Will Be Blood?
Yeah, but like, I wasn't as impressed when I finished as you were. But like, I think like Oppenheimer, you get to see like how he was gonna like, you know what I'm saying, like, really show that he was struggling with the concept that he was building something that needed to get done because
if not,
it would have ended the war. But he knew it was gonna destroy lives. So basically, he knew he had to destroy lives to save lives. And I feel like that was a real fucking like moral dilemma that he struggled with.
Yeah.
And I don't think that happened for my boy Daniel Plainview. Like, I don't think he had to deal with something like that. Like, at the end of the day, like, you oiling, when you rig oil, you're not helping nobody, bro. Exactly.
And you think you're helping someone when you create an atomic bomb?
Yeah, because literally they could have created
Edward.
They
created, Oppenheimer is responsible for genocide.
They could have created and killed
but
everybody.
They didn't though, Edward.
Because
we're not living in a world of hypotheticals. We're living in what actually happened.
Yeah.
What I find interesting about Oppenheimer though,
how many lives did were destroyed so that more could be saved? Like,
so they're saying the final estimate according to the movie was like 220,000 people died as a result of Oppenheimer's atomic weapon. But the thing that I find interesting about Oppenheimer and the interesting irony is that here is a man who put together the Federation of Architects, Engineers, Chemists, and Technicians, the FAECT, and because they wanted to fight for the common man and all this stuff, right? But then an interesting thing that I found about Josh Hartnett's character is like, you understand that like you and the people that you hold these communist leanings for, like, y'all are not the same. You understand that, right? Like, you're just not you're not in the same league. Like, you guys are architects, engineers, chemists, and technicians, and we're talking about people who like pump gas. We're talking about people who do this other shit, right? Anyway, I find it interesting that Oppenheimer has such an affinity for these people, and then goes and creates an atomic weapon that literally kills farmers, people that work the fields, people that have absolutely nothing to do really with the war.
But like, that wasn't his choice. Like, he was building the bomb to bomb Germany, not to bomb Japan.
What did he say? He said, my only regret was that we didn't build the bomb soon enough to destroy Germany.
Yeah.
And did it anyway. And that's what Strauss said. I remember Strauss saying it specifically when he was talking to Han Solo. I think that's who that was. I think he played Han Solo.
Yeah, yeah, he did.
And he was telling me like
yeah, he, right? Yeah, I knew I saw him somewhere. I'm just like, he was in the Coen Brothers movie too, right?
Yes,
he was. The Hell Caesar movie?
Yes,
right?
Yes, he was. Wow.
That's what I knew.
So like, you know,
it's got a weird name.
I guess like the way that the movie is portrayed, like, yeah, I think Oppenheimer like saw himself as some tragic hero, but like, it's interesting to have the objective view of his villain, Strauss, say like, he did this for himself. Like, there's no one else.
That and that's hubris.
Yeah.
Daniel Plainview in There Will Be Blood, he does this whole thing where it's just like, oh.
The fundamental difference being that like, Plainview killed one man. Oppenheimer killed over 220,000 people.
I'm going to sound crazy right here, but the one man that Daniel Plainview killed
Two men, I'm sorry.
I'm still going to just go with the one man that he killed. Mm-hmm. I think symbolically, however you say that word. I know. I knew I was going to draw a big sigh from that word. I think it equates, in terms of the confines of the film, it equates to
220,000.
This was going to be my other question that I forgot.
Yes.
But it was just that I actually going to just turn it into a statement.
Yeah.
I appreciate that they didn't show the bombings for Japan, because this is a real life event that people really went through and struggle with, and seeing that glorified in film would have been kind of crazy, like to show the bombings on Hiroshima and
Nagasaki.
So it's crazy to me that you just said that. That you just compared a fictional character to a real life 200,000 people. Like, that was wild. So,
yeah.
Hats off.
In any
case. Anyways, what's your rating, Isaac?
It's not a tepid yellow. It is a yellow, though. Like, it's still a yellow. Like, but here's the thing, though. Like, I'm convinced-ish that if I were to watch this movie, like, two more times, it might change my mind. But you remember, I'm a psycho, bro. Like, I'll watch a movie 50,000 times if it means that I understand it thoroughly, right? So, like, this is and I'm not saying that I don't understand the gist. Like, obviously, I understand. I think we all understand the gist of what we saw. But like you said, like, there were bits and pieces that we lost in the audio that might have helped us even further understand the movie. Like, for instance, you didn't know that Oppenheimer and Florence Pugh's character were married. They were fully married. They were.
I think that just missed it in the pacing of the movie. The movie was fast for it.
It was fast. But you also, like, it would have been helpful for you. But remember, they talked about that during the hearing. And, like, their speech during the hearing, like, it wasn't...
It was fast-paced regardless, I feel like.
Wait, in that regard, like, you know, I still call it a yellow. Like, I would definitely... Would I recommend this movie? That's a good question. I think I would have to really think about the audience that I'm targeting if I recommend the movie. It's one of those movies. Like, I wouldn't just tell anyone to watch this movie.
I feel like anybody that asks should watch it. I feel like if you're not gonna watch it, you already know you're not gonna watch it. So if you start questioning, yo, should I watch it? I'm gonna be like, yes.
I hear that. Like, I understand what Isaac's saying. Like, it is a specific part. I don't think I could recommend this to my girl. I know she won't sit through
it. I 100% can't recommend this to my girlfriend. She already told me from jump, like, 3 hours long? Nope.
Exactly. See what I mean? Timing could be a positive or a negative depending on the audience.
No, that's facts.
And I could withstand a 3-hour movie. Shit, like, I fucking saw the goddamn Snyder Cut. That's four. Yikes. Twice. I don't know why I saw it twice.
Cause you're wild.
I feel like this is like a cinephile.
Oh yeah, I mean,
this is a movie appreciator's movie. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
would you recommend it?
What he just said.
Like I said, I'll recommend it to anybody that's thinking about watching it. Anybody that's on the fence, watch it.
Yeah. But
there's people that already knew they weren't gonna watch it. They're like, I don't give a fuck about an atomic bomb, and I don't care about 3-hour movies that are black and white. Like, you know what I'm saying? That ruled it out immediately without actually even knowing.
Do you think people that are on the fence? So you're saying that people that are on the fence should watch it, right?
For sure.
Would you be so bold to even go further and say, if you do watch it, you'll definitely like it? Or do you think, like, even after they watch it, even if they're on the fence, they won't necessarily find value to it?
I say it's a must watch.
It's a must watch regardless?
Must watch regardless, okay. Whether you like it or not.
Okay.
It's a must watch. And I feel like over time, all yellows will be green.
Over time? Oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. You think so?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, that's like an awesome statement right there. I think, like, why is he just said, it just struck a chord to me. I was like, I think if I were, like, to recommend this to somebody, but, like, my thing would be, I think I would say verbatimly is, yes, it's educational, you might like it.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I would go about it. I won't be like, yeah, go watch it.
Like, yeah, I won't be, like, super excited. I'll be like, yo, this, like, because that's why I said the term that I said, importance, yeah. I feel like that's the right word. Like,
yeah. It's important.
Like, yo, check it out. Like, because it's historic. It's real life events about a very important time. It's going to enlighten you, bro. Like,
for sure. In that regard, yeah, for sure it's educational.
Mm-hmm. And one could say it's artistic, too.
I found the education.
I think it's artistic. I think, you know, when you're talking to the regular person that's not really a moviegoer, they're not going to appreciate it like that. They're going to be like, it's a 3-hour flick. I'm not going to, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're talking about our respective partners and stuff like that, like, they're probably not going to watch it.
Well, some respective partners are movie lovers, but they
not that ours. That's ours. So like, yeah, like if you know Christopher Danello, Christopher Nolan directed this, this is a must watch, and you're gonna like it. Like that's how I do it. Like if you know him by name, you gotta watch this, and you're gonna like it.
It's like more like it's like
not for me.
It's like more if like if I were to explain that to somebody that kinda is like in that realm, like they, you know, they're curious and things like that. And sometimes I do it like in, you know, very in layman's terms. I'm like, hey, do you know the guy that made the fucking Batman trilogy? He made that. Oh, okay.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like sometimes you gotta talk to
those
certain
are,
people.
Those are the middle. Those are the middle people. And those are people I'm not sure would like the movie.
Oh, I see. Probably not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they might. They're like the 50-50 people.
Right.
But if they know the name of any director, fuck that. Then go watch this shit. But no, some people just know if you tell them what other movies they made, then they'd be like, oh, I like those movies.
Right.
Then, but they're not consciously knowing who the director is or the producer, whatever you want to call them. Those people are, I feel like, are 50-50s, you know?
Okay. Well, anyways, my rating didn't change. It's still a green. It was about to go to a yellow because I was seeing eye to eye with my man Brian and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Being that he was my movie buddy, he was sitting next to me.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah, me and Maddie just kept making funny comments to each other.
It's funny that y'all was both yellow sitting next to each other and Isaac and I are both green. So, oh, wait,
I'm still a yellow.
My bad.
No, he's still yellow.
You're the only green.
No, I am.
Oh, you're green too.
But I was saying that I was almost going to the yellow side. But I, when I really think about it, right, I always ask myself the same questions as always is, what did you like and what did you not like? If I can't name a lot of shit that I didn't like, then why would I give it a yellow? Right, like, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like, I'm like, if I would, if you would ask me that question, what that I didn't like about this movie, I can't really think of shit. I really can't. Maybe the fact that maybe when I make, like, I know I agree with you guys, nothing should be cut. But if I were to cut things, it would be like tiny little things. Tiny little.
You know what I heard?
It would even condense it.
You know what I heard? Somebody had an opinion. I wonder if you guys agree with it. They said that when the explosion happened, the movie could have ended. And then they decided to do this whole afterlife thing. That was an additional... Like, that was at the two-hour mark. So the last hour, which I think where Robert Downey got to shine. But it was basically the tear down of Oppenheimer, which could have been excluded. So y'all feel like that could have been a point where... cut. Like people saying that's almost like a movie in itself.
No,
the way
it couldn't have been cut. And the reason I say it is because remember the very, very, very beginning of the movie? It began with the quote of, and Prometheus stole fire from the gods and gave it to humanity.
Yeah.
And he was chained to a rock for the rest of eternity and tortured. And the movie shows us both of those parts, right? They show us the part of Oppenheimer pulling from the universe this fire, this majestic fire, and putting it into this tiny little compartment that when someone pushes a button, it becomes a much bigger explosion. And then we needed to fulfill the rest of that quote and watch his punishment. So we had to see that. So that was necessary. So no, I don't think removing that last hour would have done us. If anything, it would have made the movie incomplete. And then it would have been a full run.
I can get behind that. Yeah, man. That was one of the strongest endings ever in a movie to me.
Yeah.
The scene with him and Albert Einstein in the end.
Oh yeah.
Talking.
Yeah.
About yo, there was almost a near zero chance that the chain reaction could have not stopped.
Yeah.
Like it just would have kept going forever.
Continue to ignite the atmosphere.
I think it did.
Well.
Bam. And then they cut into like how the future started going. And
That's true.
Hard.
Oh,
that
that's true.
Was so hard.
Yeah. That's true.
Damn, bars and then off.
Speaking of hubris, though, interesting that Strauss thought that that event was about him somehow,
right?
And that's what set everything off. That's why Strauss was like, "No, fuck Oppenheimer! Like, I gotta get him off the paint real quick."
Yeah, that's right. Oppenheimer humiliates him at a conference.
They were just talking about something completely
had nothing to do with you, my guy.
It's just a bunch of guys with soft egos.
Word.
He got bodied by his boy, his own assistant.
Word.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that shit eating grin at the end. Oh my god, yeah.
He was shitting. He was like, yo, go out there. Go face that shit.
Yeah.
And take that L.
I think Downey Jr. should win the Oscars for that
alone.
3 seconds alone. Just that when he opens the door, looks at his band, gives that grin and just faces the music. Yeah, that scene alone was just like, wow.
Brian, if someone gives you a smile like that,
it's on site immediately. Yeah, yeah, it's just
that,
like,
that is a very dangerous look.
Yeah,
it looks like, damn, you're about to eat shit.
Yeah, like,
go out there, champ.
Yeah. He's asking for a buffet.
Word.
Right, what's the next movie?
To be announced, man.
TBA.
But that was an exciting flick. So to wrap it up, we got a green from the DRD, a green from myself, Words, a yellow from Chem Dog, and a yellow from Isaac,
the resident boomer.
So with that being said, man, that wraps it up. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it all the way here to the end of the episode, then that means you obviously fuck with us. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button.
Do it.
You know what I'm saying? Go ahead and follow us on social media at Critical Ave. And as always, man, the streets are watching. And the Ave is critical.
Let's get it.
Peace out. We out.
Deuces. Bye.